Hello and welcome to Railway Mania. This is the first round of Kings of the Steam Age. This is a new feature highlighting some of the leading figures in steam traction and steam locomotive development. Guests will have to fight their corner for their chosen candidate. First up, we have Graham Musprat, who is going to be arguing the case for OVS Bullied. Graham, welcome back to Railway Mania and being a participant in our King of the Steam Age feature. So you've nominated Bullied.
Yes, I've nominated Oliver Vaughan Snell Bullied.
1882 to 1970. So a long and distinguished life.
Indeed, yes.
So to kick things off, could you give us a brief outline of Bullied's career?
Well, I think most people will recognise Bullied from being the chief mechanical engineer of the Southern Railway between 1937 and 1949. But actually, he started his life on the railways, on the Great Northern Railway, back in 1901 as a premium apprentice. He was actually interviewed by H.A. Ivatt, and Bullied would later go on to marry his daughter. But as well as working on the Great Northern Railway at that time as an apprentice and then personal assistant to a locomotive superintendent, he spent, just after he got married in 1908, time working in France with the French Westinghouse Company as a test engineer. Then worked for the UK Board of Trade for their overseas exhibitions team, working as a mechanical and electrical engineer for the 1910 Brussels and the 1911 Turin exhibitions, before returning to the Great Northern Railway in 1912 as personal assistant to one H.N. Gresley. Under Gresley, he had a fairly wide remit, working on all sorts of things, from coaching stock development through to welding and coach underframes that he had welded and boiler barrels and improving the riding of coaching stock, but also locomotives such as the 282 P1 and P2 class locomotives and their development. And the race to the north by the mid-1930s was very much on. Bullied spent some time in Germany looking at the Maybank flying hamburger diesel unit train with its Bugatti styling. And that, of course, then led to him working with Gresley on the A4 Pacifics and the Silver Jubilee trains with their streamlined skirts between the bogies, for example, on the underframes. So you can start to see where those influences are coming in. When Gresley in 1923 was appointed CME of the new LNER, he continued to have Bullied as his personal assistant, but now working out of offices at King's Cross. Meanwhile, in the mid-1930s, over on the Southern Railway, although not long-distance speed trains were really required, there was a need for larger locomotives, particularly on the Dover boat trains, which were getting heavier and heavier and needed to keep their point-to-point timings. Maunsell, who was the CME of the Southern Railway from 1923, hadn't actually produced a new locomotive design since 1926, the 12 Lord Nelson class locomotives. Powerful, but perhaps not the best of steamers. So at the start of 1937, Maunsell announced his intention to retire in October that year. On the 10th of May 1937, whilst he was working away, Bullied received a telegram which stated, "Sir Hubert Walker wishes to see you tomorrow, 12:30, Gresley." Sir Hubert Walker, of course, was the general manager at the time of the Southern Railway. And at that meeting with Bullied, he asked Bullied if he would apply for the role of CME of the Southern Railway. A week later, Bullied applied, and on the 27th of May, Bullied was appointed CME of the Southern Railway by the board. And there started his tenure on the Southern Railway, which most people will be familiar with. How's that?
That's brilliant. His days at working for the LNER and the GNR, he's not only a disciple of Gresley, he's basically Gresley's right-hand man.
Very much so. And as I said, he's got this wide sphere and an almost open invitation to get on and do a variety of things. Gresley was very much a sort of a black and white man and would make fairly quick decisions and didn't really want to get involved with some of the stuff out on the wider sphere of the CME's role. And Bullied, therefore, had almost a free hand in some of those areas.
And from Gresley, Bullied gets this aptitude for innovation and forward thinking in terms of always trying new things, always tinkering.
I don't know whether it was actually necessarily from Gresley per se, but Gresley allowed him to investigate and trial some of these new technologies and influences, such as higher boiler pressures, the welding technology and so forth. The relationship between Bullied and Gresley was extremely good. They spent time at the end of the day before their respective trains home, almost in a huddle together, when everybody else had left work, those two would have a drink together and probably a smoke. And that's where they would have an open conversation about things and chew the cud, if you like. And that's where some of these ideas were bounded around and came to fruition from.
How open to new ideas was Bullied then, in terms of getting ideas from other sources?
I think he was very much influenced by other sources. His time with Westinghouse, time with the French railways, going out to Germany and looking at the flying hamburger and discussions with Maybank and Bugatti. I mean, the LNER actually, after Bullied's visit, did ask Maybank to provide a quote for an entire train to run on the London to Newcastle route, but was rather expensive. And actually, with the war looming, it probably wouldn't have occurred anyway. So
yeah, it wouldn't have been in good taste at the time.
No, that's right.
What was their position on things like standardisation? Because some CMEs are known for sort of sorting things out and making things easy to maintain, but innovation is almost at odds with that.
I'm not sure that Bullied was one for perhaps standardisation. However, he was very interested in trying to make the lot of the railwaymen easier, whether that's with enclosed cab designs. You look at the seats on the A4 Pacifics, for example, that's pure Bullied, trying to give the drivers and so forth greater comfort. And he did the same on the Southern Railway with, you know, ensuring that the firemen had all the controls for what he needed to do on the fireman's side, never having to cross the cab to go and work a set of injectors that were controlled from underneath the driver's seat, for example. So as a result of the River-class tanks derailing in 1927 at Sevenoaks, Gresley was asked if he would do a trial on the LNER to look at the riding capabilities of those locomotives. Actually, although it was Gresley that was responsible for doing that, Bullied was doing all the legwork. And as well as riding the river classes on the LNER, he actually spent some time riding Lord Nelson's, actually, in 1927, and just to get a feel for the permanent way on the southern side of things. And on one of those trips, the fireman side injectors had failed, and Bullied had noticed that the fireman was having to cross the cab to go and operate the injectors on the driver's side, which also weren't operating all that well. And Bullied actually convinced them to keep going, rather than stop the service. And eventually, as the injectors cooled down, they both started working again. You know, the fact that the fireman had to cross the cab and look underneath the driver's seats to try and get to these controls was something that Bullied later remembered and used as part of his locomotive design to ensure that the controls for both injectors were on the fireman's side and he wouldn't have to cross the cab so much.
Well, it's a look at ergonomics, really. That's what you'd call it now.
Yeah, exactly. He also listened to drivers when he was out on the road with them as well, and was responsible, for example, for fitting cab heaters inside some of the first EMUs on the Southern Railway, because the drivers were complaining that they were always cold in the winter. So he would listen to perhaps the drivers and so forth more than perhaps the board.
And in World War II, Bullied really starts to come into his own.
Yes, I mean, obviously the Q1060 austerity tender locomotives were first introduced in 1941, and they were very much built with austerity in mind and reducing weight, reducing costs, and reducing materials, particularly with the tenders, for example, that were prone to bow out when they were full of water. But the Merchant Navy Pacifics, the first 10 of those, although they came out in 1941 under wartime conditions, and there is this thing about them being mixed traffic locomotives, which is the only reason they got allowed.
Well, we'll come on to that.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually, you know, the order was placed for those in 1938, was the permission to go ahead and design 10 new express passenger locomotives. But partly the reason why Bullied was able to get them through was the fact that he used 6-foot 2-inch driving wheels rather than the more traditional express locomotive driving wheel size of 6-foot 7. But when you look back at the P2s on the LNER, their driving wheel size, as dictated by Bullied at the time, was 6-foot 2-inch driving wheels. So again, that influence from his LNER days is coming through into the Southern Railway as well.
The Q1 is sometimes described as the ultimate development of the British goods 060. But in a way, the merchant navies could not be more different.
The Q1s were actually known for their turn of speed and were quite often used as a substitute on passenger locomotives if they were short of locomotives. The biggest issue with the Q1 was not actually their speed or power, which was pretty damn good, but was with their ability to actually stop. Their braking power alone, because of their low adhesion weight, wasn't actually all that good. But yeah, very austerity design, But that design was started under wartime conditions, whereas the merchant navies were started effectively sort of a year and a half before the war. So there was a lot of express passenger side of that locomotive in place before the war started.
And the merchant navies lead to the development of the light Pacifics as well.
Indeed, yes.
Post-war, we're looking forward to electrification and also dieselisation. So Bullied introduces diesel traction to the Southern.
Well, he introduced electric traction to the Southern as well. The Southern obviously has been using EMUs on the suburban routes for, you know, since the early 1910s. That was progressively getting wider and wider across the network. In 1941, Bullied worked with Raworth, actually, to produce the first of the two what known as booster locomotives, the COCO locomotive designs with booster technology, i.e. big flywheels, to allow those locomotives to travel across the third rail gaps. So an electric unit, of course, is picking up of a much longer, wider area. So the problem with an electric loco with third rail is how do you get across the gaps? And so the booster design was built for that. And they were used on the New Haven boat trains and things like that, two extremely powerful locomotives, very much appreciated by the drivers because, you know, they had this raw power at their hands for both freight trains being electric hauled and also passenger trains. And they survived the last one right up until 1969. But as you say, immediately post-war, Bullied started with the Bullied diesels. First of all, a couple of sort of shunting type locos, but also the one COCO, one Bullied diesels that we know, 10201 and 10203. Their design was actually started before the LMS twins came out, but the actual physical locos didn't arrive until just after nationalisation in 1948-49. Extremely good, powerful locomotives with English electric diesel engines in. One thing about Bullied is his legacy of things that some of the more run-of-the-mill things that got carried through much later on. So you look at the bogie design of the Bullied diesel, it was then effectively the same design that they used on the Class 40s, the Class 44s through to the 46s. Exactly the same bogie design, albeit a slightly different body shape on the same effectively base engine format. So again, that Bullied design was carried right the way through onto those locomotives as well.
Side by side with this future-looking development is always the ultimate attempt to get steam traction to work alongside diesel and electric traction.
Yep.
So this is the Leader, which history knows as a failure. What was the thinking behind that? Was that developed for a direct comparison between the two?
Not as such. The traction department at the time were looking for what they considered to be passenger tank locomotives. So originally, people were talking about a replacement for the M7, and that's what the original budget was for. The traffic department then decided that, well, actually, yes, we can do with these larger tank locomotives, but what we could actually do with is something that's far more powerful, has got good route availability, easy steaming, et cetera, et cetera. We can run at higher speeds than you'd get if we just made some new M7s. So although on one camp there's the people that says, I can't believe the Leader was produced just to replace M7s, it's a bit more complicated than that. The design brief, the requirement brief changed over a period of time. Now, whether that was from lobbying behind the scenes from Bullied, who knows? But the traction department certainly came up with this new specification of 90 mile an hour running and to be able to be used on 90% of the Southern Railway network. And the 10% included things like the Isle of Wight and the Bodmin and Wadebridge branch and things like that. So Bullied did look at almost like a, first of all, an 060 or a 262, 462 versions of a Q1, for example, because actually there was an order for 25 new Q1s on the books, and some of the material for that had been purchased, and that order for the Q1s got stopped, and some of that got diverted through to build tenders for the Light Pacifics, for example. But that turned it from a passenger tank locomotive through to, actually, we want something that can be driven from both ends or driven equally quickly forwards and backwards, then led to this idea of having a cab at each end. And actually, the design was based on what's called a Kurtz and Mayer articulated locomotive. So 2060 bogies, three cylinders on each bogie, again, encased in an oil bath, a bit like the Merchant Navies and the Light Pacifics, which the aim there was to reduce maintenance costs. You know, if it's almost turning it into the internal combustion engine. You know, you don't have to empty the oil out every day. It just sits there and works in a bath of oil.
So it's not unlike a cross between a Sentinel locomotive and a Kitzmaier.
Yeah, very much so. But in the middle of that, you had Bullied's fantastic free steaming boilers. One of his real success things is his free steaming boilers in the merchant navies, the Q1s, right the way across the board. You never saw any complaints about how well those locomotives steamed. And his attention to detail on the steam passages, because he'd previously done a bit of work on the Lord Nelsons. His very first job on the Southern, if you like, was to look at the Lord Nelson class and think, well, we've got a base for a powerful locomotive here. What's throttling it at the front end? And he did a lot of work on the steam passages and the piston valves. He increased the piston valve length and, of course, fitted them with the Maitre blast pipe arrangement. But again, it wasn't a pure Lemaitre arrangement. He tweaked it to his own needs. And that's Bullied was very good at taking technology, whether that's the Bullied Firth Brown wheels, which were a kind of version of the American box pox wheel. He then worked with the Firth Brown foundry here in the UK to improve the design and actually make it better, and therefore wouldn't have to pay royalties to box pox as well, which was the other thing for changing the design. But he wasn't adverse to taking something from other areas and looking at it intently and developing it and improving it. If you take a pure Lemaitre exhaust blast pipe, he modified it for his use on the Southern Railway.
So Bullied was known for looking after crews and things like that. But what went wrong with the leader? So why was the fireman being roasted alive in the centre of the logo?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you've ever been on a Merchant Navy cab in the middle of the summer firing, you'll probably find that there's probably not a lot of difference in temperature between the two. There's a few fundamental areas with the leader that I think, you know, he could have sort of taken a bit of a step back on. The idea, for example, that they wanted to have a corridor between the driving cabs at each end, meant they offset the boiler by 6 inches, which then means you've got to counterbalance the offset weight somehow. So that increased the overall weight of it. The original design for the Bullied leader was to be oil fired, and in which case the fireman would actually have been sat up front with the driver. So that would have eliminated potentially that problem. Bullied, for whatever reason, on his boilers, occasionally you think, I don't know why he did that. The rear of the boiler and the firebox wasn't lagged on the leader. So there was no, if you were sat in the cab of the number one end of the Bullied leader, you had the smoke box door a foot behind you, which also got extremely hot. So actually, if you look at all the test runs of the Bullied leader, it's always the number two end leading, because that was effectively, you had the water tank and the coal bunker behind you rather than the smoke box door. Not that it really was a smoke box door. The smoke box was designed to enable the ash and so forth to be emptied out of the bottom of it. So you didn't have to shovel the ash out like you do on a normal steam locomotive. So again, thinking of maintenance and so, you know, preparation and disposal.
You've convinced me. I mean, it sounds like death by committee almost.
Yeah, and he went for a sleeve valve options on the, in fact, oscillating sleeve valves on the cylinders, which are quite a complex design in their own right, more akin to a marine engine than something on a railway. And there was issues with the sleeve valve lugs at the end sort of shearing and so on. And during the various test runs, which occurred after Bullied had left the Southern to go over to Ireland to work for CIE in Ireland. Of course, then when the person who's the head of the project leaves and it's his baby, he disappears off. There was not quite the drive to perhaps get it to work properly. So I think you could call it a failure on one hand. There's a lot of innovation there. Perhaps also come along a little bit too late, I think.
Going back to the wartime years, do you think that Bullied could be accused of pursuing a vanity project with the merchant navies during a time of war?
I think when you look at the amount of traffic that was on the Southern Railway at the time, they were desperately, desperately short of motive power. You know, you've only got to look at things like Operation Dynamo at the start of the war, where we were retrieving service people from Dunkirk. The way the Southern Railway were running train services to move people away from the ports and get them inland and then eventually back to whether it's Plymouth or wherever, those train services worked with a military-like precision without the military being involved. And there was actually one general that went on record saying that, I don't know how the Southern Railway did that because we couldn't do it as an army. Drivers were driving trains not knowing where they were going. They were just being told to take this train to a particular place, and then you'll find out then when you get there, you'll find out where you're going next. But they moved an extraordinary amount of people. But of course, later in the war, preparing for D-Day and things like that, there was a huge amount of railway services on the southern. It was quite really bearing the brunt of a lot of the services. And so, you know, there was that reason for bringing new locomotives to bear, because they were, you know, stuff that had been taken out of service in the late 1930s, was because it hadn't been withdrawn yet, was being taken off the scrap line almost and put back into service. They were so short of locomotives.
Do you think that Bulley's innovations were, in the end, with the benefit of hindsight, a step too far, or do you think that he didn't go far enough?
I think you can say with hindsight it's potentially a step too far, but I also feel that there are certain areas of his designs that if you were doing that design today, it would work. With modern materials, modern seals, and all those sorts of things, that he was being almost held back with wartime conditions and so on, that those designs were inherently reasonably good designs, let down by perhaps some of the materials involved and some of the other technologies at the time not quite keeping up.
So upon his death, he was described as the last truly original and progressive mechanical engineer of the steam locomotive era in Britain. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I mean, when you go back and look at a lot of the early engineers, whether that is Stephenson, whether it's Telford, whether it's Brunel, for example, one thing's always struck me about those designers and those engineers is they didn't stop at one thing. You know, one day they'll be building a bridge, the next day they'll be building a ship, the next day they'll be building a railway to Bristol. You know, and they were really a jack of all trades. And what's happened over the time is our engineers have just got more and more focused. And I think that Bullied was probably one of the last to be involved with coach design, wagon design on one day, locomotive design the next, and so on. Yes, he didn't get involved perhaps like Brunel would have done on laying out for a new railway line. But in those days, the CME was responsible for everything. And you see Bullied's hand in so many different areas. You know, yes, you could say that under Maunsell's days, Lyons, as he was the coaching man. Bullied worked with Raworth, who was the chief electrical engineer. And Raworth was always fighting with Maunsell because Maunsell was steam engines and Raworth was there wanting to electrify everything. Bullied actually saw everything knitting together. He could work with Raworth on electrics for part of the service on one part of the network, but there was never going to be electrification through to the West Country. Although it was planned, it was never going to happen for 20, 30 years. It never has happened. But, you know, there was a southern railway plan to do that. Bullied was able to intertwine with those and to say, OK, yes, we've got to develop the electric side, but we still need steam over here. And therefore, I need to have a locomotive that's capable of working on the West of England main line with its gradients and so forth, which is why the 6'2" driving wheels were so applicable. You know, when you look at what he does and how some of that's been translated and brought forward into what we recognise today, whether it's the Class 40 design, whether it's the Mark 1 coaching stock design, which was in essence a slight cross between the southern coaches, because Bullied would recognise that certain things were right and he wouldn't touch them. He'd done a lot of work on the LNER to improve coach riding and improving the LNER bogie design or the Great Northern bogie design. When he got to the Southern Railway, the Southern Standard 8-foot bogie, he said, well, this is fine. I don't really need to touch that. So that bogie design was used on the Maunsell coaches and Bullied reused it again on his coaching stock. He did come up with a slightly improved design a bit later on one of the inspection saloons, but that was a one-off.
Could you sum up for us in 30 seconds then why Bullied is the king of the steam age?
I'm actually going to be cheeky here and say he's one of the kings of the steam age, but I think he's certainly up there. I think he's actually broader than being just a king of the steam age because he had that interest in diesels and the electric locos as well. The advances that he made on both steam engine design, particularly boiler design. I mean, his were definitely the freest steaming boilers ever built in the UK for a steam locomotive. So he did have his quirks, but I think he brought a lot of innovation and a lot of interesting innovation to both steam, diesel and electric.
Brilliant. So that wraps up episode one of Kings of the Steam Age. Big thanks to Graham for coming on the podcast. I hope you liked it and it provided some education and entertainment. Stay subscribed for more episodes soon.